All right, it's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Second half kickoff, David Johnston, Logan Booker along with you, and former Georgia head coach and college football Hall of Famer Jim Donovan for the next 2 hours. We love our Tuesdays and sometimes Mondays, but mainly Tuesdays. Coach, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Glad to be with you. This new situation for us here.
Yeah, welcome to the new studio.
This is awesome. I got lost getting back here. But
I know.
This is the first time, I think, in 4 years we have a good, solid, working microphone in front of Coach, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working at a tremendous disadvantage, but, you know, that's part of my handicap, though. They want to make sure I really perform. So, but everything's been good to me with Cox. They've done a great job of taking care of me, old Coach, getting me where I'm supposed to be. And we're not going to be at the Blind Pig, but we're going to be at the studio Friday night breaking down this big game against the Vols. And every year at this time, you got to remember that there's two guys getting ready to be executed, and they were on death row. And one of them, the warden goes up to the first one and says, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do." He said, "I'm going to give you anything you want, one last wish." And he tells the guy from Georgia the same thing, the guy from Tennessee. And so the guy from Tennessee says, "I want to hear Rocky Top one more time." And the guy from Georgia says, "Kill me first."
And well, that's how it feels.
That song drives me crazy.
We will get a heavy, heavy dose of that Saturday night. I guess every positive yardage, they just play it.
And you know, I had I love to go to Georgia practice occasionally, but during this week, I don't like to go because they play Rocky Top over there all week, too, and get those kids ready for it. But, you know, I think we probably had the most red and black in that stadium it's ever been Saturday, because I think a little bit of apathy up there. But, you know, it's just a massive rebuild when you look at the downfall of that program. And I think you told me they're like less than 33% since Fulmer has been the coach in the conference, right?
They basically got the same number of, over the last 10 years, the same number of wins in the conference as Kentucky and Vandy. I mean, that's basically what they've been.
Yeah, and they're not even the state champions. They've lost the last three to Derek Mason, which basically has kept Derek Mason the coach at Vanderbilt. I mean, hard to fire guys beat Tennessee 3 years in a row.
Absolutely.
And we talked about this before. Memphis is probably the best team in the state
right
now. Oh,
yeah. I mean, I watched Memphis against Navy. Of course, Navy, either Thursday or Friday night. Navy, just makes you work to get everything because you're so desperate to get off the field on defense. But the thing that this coach, Mike Norvell, the coach at Memphis, only 37 years old. He's been the head coach 4 or 5 years. He came in there from Arizona State. Just has a really good concept of throwing the ball, but they always have a good back. They run the ball extremely well. They just can't get over the hump and beat UCF. That's been their nemesis. They've lost a couple tight-fit games for that American Conference Championship. Every year they're winning 9, 10, 11 games there at Memphis. And when he took over, that program was really low. And they've put out some good coaches, among which defensive coordinator Dan Lanning was coaching at Memphis before he came here. And Darrell Dickey, who is the offensive coordinator for the Texas A&M Aggies, was at Memphis. So they put it – and I think Chip Long – the coach, you might look that up for me. I think Chip Long, the offensive coordinator for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, came out of that group too. So they're putting out some good coaches along with a good program.
That happens to, like, because I always feel like maybe the MAC on the field, maybe the product's not as good, but they have a lot of good coaches, and then they get taken by the bigger schools. I know Memphis isn't in the MAC, but you see that, whether it's some of the smaller conferences, there are really good coaches in those leagues.
Exactly. I mean, back when I was growing up in the MAC, the cradle of coaches there at Miami of Ohio with Woody Hayes and Eric Parsegian and Bo Schembechler all coming out of Miami of Ohio, along with a lot of others. Jim Mallory, who did a great job at Colorado and Indiana. Just they call it the cradle of coaches, and it was. And over the years, you've seen programs that have really put guys out. For instance, you look at all the guys that coached for Mike Leach at Texas Tech now that are out there, you know, just balling and doing a great job. Lincoln Riley was like a GA for him and then became his receiver coach. So, and of course, we've talked about Nick Saban and his cradle and the guys, and we've got two coaching against each other this week, and Jeremy Pruitt for Tennessee and our own Kirby Smart, who really, you know, both of them prospered at Alabama and have done a good job, you know, on their own too. Particularly Kirby done a great job here, and I think Pruitt probably doesn't get enough credit for some of the things he did here at Georgia, and he really did a good job at Florida State too, winning a national championship. But usually speaking, it's like professional football. Usually you don't get a job because the team's doing great, you know, and so he inherited a real mess. I think they've got a really good staff of teachers and recruiters. And as you know, both you guys know, there's always going to be enough players in Georgia and the surrounding states. If you get the guys that Georgia and Alabama don't get, you got a shot, mm-hmm. you know. But I think this thing, their personnel has been woefully bad, you know, the last year that Jones was there, and then the last couple of years, their personnel. But they and everybody talks about their first game loss to Georgia State, which is monumental. But they're going to be a team that knows in and out of what we do, and we know what they do and all that. But it's down to players, and mm-hmm. it's going to be, you know, one of those games that you just got to take care of business.
By the way, Chip Long did Memphis OC back in 2016, so you were right on that. You mentioned I usually am.
No,
I know. Really. We know.
No, I'm not. I'm glad.
We don't need to confirm it.
When I ask you to fact check me, I'm not sure. But,
yeah.
But the point is, good coaches, and mm-hmm. Justin Fuente, who's struggling right now at Virginia Tech but started out extremely well and extremely hot, was the coach at Memphis before Mike Norvell took over.
You mentioned, Coach, you might have a lot of red and black in Neyland Stadium this weekend. I personally know several people that have decided to make their first trip up to Knoxville because it's a seemingly a good year to go. I think tickets right now on the secondary market are under face value if somebody wanted to pick up a pair and go. But let me ask you, just in teams aside, because the 90s was very much Tennessee's heyday, but how would you describe Neyland Stadium to somebody that's never been there before?
Well, it's very loud. Mm-hmm. You know, seats are close together. You know, we played there one year, and they had a water break in our locker room, and we went in after the game, and it looked like the Tennessee River was in there. You know, we couldn't. It was a terrible situation. Certainly, they apologized to us, but you talk about a bad locker room. You lose a game, and then you go in there, and you almost drown before you get home. And but that's the one thing I remember about playing up there. Just not a real good atmosphere. But I always liked going up there for one reason, because a lot of our prospects would go to the game. And, you know, back then you couldn't get many contacts with the players. And I used to just walk up and down the sideline over there to make Fulmer mad, just to act like I was talking to him. But I really wasn't. I was just kind of glancing at him. But you know how close I am to you right now, David. Yeah. I was walking there right beside some really good players, and really got on Fulmer's nerves, but didn't bother him. They still beat us, but we had a good win my last year. But it was just something we need to get over the hump, because Tennessee had to run, and you know, timing's everything. But Tennessee, Florida, and our number one recruiting school that we went against outside of Tennessee and Florida State. In the 5 years I was here, all three of them won the national championship. So they were all kind of at their zenith, you know. And then Georgia Tech won the ACC too. So, but I think Kirby just dominating SEC East right now. I mean, maybe Missouri can get better. I don't think Florida. I've done some real, because I know we'll go around the SEC, I've done some, actually some homework on Florida this week, talking to some coaches and all. I just think Florida's lack of experience in the offensive line is going to really hurt them against good defensive teams. I mean, they've been going against some, it's pretty obvious Kentucky was not the team we thought they would be or were last year. And, you know, Towson Tigers, boy, that's a tough foe, boy. You got to watch out for Tyson, Towson Tigers. Although they're a good 1AA team. And then, you know, Miami struggling. So we'll just have to see about Florida. But I think Missouri probably presents a pretty good challenge to us. And then certainly Auburn. Got to be the big surprise team of the SEC right now. Their offense to go with their defense. Auburn's just a team to be reckoned with. A&M probably not near as good as we thought they'd be.
Yeah. Real quick, I'm glad you mentioned the big win that you had over Tennessee in 2000 in Sanford. I was going to ask you about that at some point this morning. History, we all know the fans rushed the field perhaps a little bit too early. You guys had to really, I guess, get on the PA and say you got to get off the field right now. But as a head coach, I mean, you're certainly excited. The game's looking like it's going to go your way. The crowd is bubbling over with excitement. But what goes through Coach Donnan's head when the crowd's all of a sudden on the field when there's still time left on the clock?
Yeah, you just worry about a penalty, you know, and worry also about the safety of everybody involved. But I was so relieved to finally beat them. You know, it was just something that we getting over the hump. But it was a game we should have won, and we just didn't finish the deal a couple years before that. But it was a very exciting win for our team, you know, to chalk up. You know, you're just kind of in misery there, losing to a team year after year. So we were glad to get that one, and it was kind of a big deal for us there when we got down a little bit. And I never forget old Musa Smith from up in Pennsylvania was our freshman running back there, and among other running backs, and he says, "Coach, we got this. We'll be all right." You know, he comes over there, and he takes a kickoff back after they went ahead, and then we go on down, and we threw a nice pass to Terrence Edwards, and then but Musa Smith, all-time recruiting story, which I'm gonna hit with you. You know how you bust your butt getting after guys and going hard and doing everything, and we everybody knows about recruiting now, but Musa Smith was a highly regarded player in Pennsylvania. I mean, among the elite players in the country. And I knew Joe Paterno, going on these Nike trips, and he actually tried to hire me when I was at Oklahoma. And so Greg Williams had this friend up at Musa's high school, and he said that Musa wanted to come down and go visit some schools in the South in the summer. And my first reaction is, we're not going to get a player that Penn State wants. I mean, you know, more than likely, that's just very hard. It'd be like them coming down here getting a guy from us. So I called up Joe and I said, "Coach, tell me about Musa Smith." I said, "What's going on?" "I don't know. I'm not sure. We probably going to take him, but it would probably be a defensive back. I don't know. We got Larry Johnson's son up here. We got to take him as a running back. I don't know." So we go ahead.
Sounds just like him. I love it.
So we go ahead, and he comes down for a visit. And before he was here, I'm talking about an unofficial visit in the summer. Mm-hmm. So he goes to South Carolina, to Florida, and to some other place, and then he comes here. But as fate would have it, every place he went, no coaches were there. You know, it was in the summer, like none of the head coaches were there, you know. And Greg Williams had gone on vacation. He said, "Coach, will you just take care of him?" I said, "I'll be here." I said, "I'll take care of him." So I did everything but shine his shoes when he's here. I mean, I'm the head coach, University of Georgia. I'm wearing this kid out. I'm taking him over there to the botanical gardens. I'm taking him to the stadium. I'm showing him everything. I mean, I was worn out after a day with this kid. And I did a good job on him. And so About 2 weeks later, he calls Greg Williams and tells him he's going to commit to us. He said, I've never seen the head coach so involved. I mean, I just did the routine stuff. Yeah. I didn't do that much, but we ended up with Musa Smith. I'm kind of getting off target here, but it's a good story about Penn State wanting him as a defensive back.
Love it. Love it.
Well, Musa ended up being the MVP of the Sugar Bowl when the Dogs beat Florida State in the 2002 season, which
was
the 2003.
Too.
Yeah, I'm glad you gave him a chance at running back, Coach. That was very nice of you to do that.
We got Musa and Albert Hollis that same year, five-star kid from the West Coast, but Albert got hurt in practice, broke his leg, terrible injury. Mm. And it was a tough situation because Ronnie Brown was over there we're trying to figure out what to do about him, and you know, we just didn't recruit him hard enough, and he went to Auburn, had a good career. But that year you got Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams, all these guys, and then you got Musa Smith and Albert Hollis. I mean, some good backs.
Good grief. By the way, and we'll get to this, we were talking about North Carolina and the two-point conversion attempt, and you were talking, and then that kind of got us going to, I don't know how we got back to the Outback Bowl in 2000, and we were trying to remember, you said the best, was that one of the best two-point conversions you ever ran? It was Patrick Pass that scored on that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll go over that game, you know, we lined up in a power eye with Terrence Edwards, if you just think of a power eye formation, and then a wing right beside the guy. And we handed the ball to Terrence like he was going to be running a sweep to the
Quincy
right.
So Quincy hands off to Terrence.
He turns to his left, hands to the ball to Terrence going to the right, and then he ran to the end like he's going to try to go around, and then he pitched the ball to Patrick Pass for a two-point play, and it really was sweet. And actually saw that at a high school game in Missouri one time and put it in my memory bank. And
how about that?
It was a good play, and Patrick stuck it in there. And I guess we can say, you asked me what I remember about the game. I remember that we didn't kick the field goal against Georgia Tech when we probably should have, and we ran one more play, and they called us for a fumble, which, you know, everybody knows was a very bad call. But so we ended up losing to Tech. And so we're in the same situation in overtime where Patrick, we ran 99 counter and got the ball down to about the 8-yard line. So we got the ball first and goal on the 8. And Randy McMichael, who was a very gregarious guy anyhow, he comes running up to me on the sideline. And everybody's got to remember, we just lost a horrendous game because we didn't kick a field goal right probably when we should have. And he comes up and he said, kick it. And he said another word. He says, kick it right now, Coach. Let's kick it. So we just snuck the ball over to the right one play, and then Hap Hines knocked it through. But that was a great comeback win. And it was
Purdue led that game 25-0 with 10:38 to go in the second quarter.
Yeah, but the problem with the game, Logan, was the game started at 11, but our players thought it started at 12:30.
that's usually a problem. Yeah.
So we got to talk about that.
We didn't do anything. Yeah. We were poorly. And one of my best halftime speeches, everybody always talks about, what do you tell them at halftime? What's your adjustments? What do you do? All that. I went and told our defensive coaches and told our defensive players, I said, we're not going to play but one coverage and one front. We're going to drop 8, rush 3, and make him throw the ball in front of us because we can't cover these guys. They're too good. We're trying to blitz him. We're trying to do all this. And you know, we made him really dink and dunk, and then our offense kind of made some big plays. And Randy McMichael made an unbelievable catch on third down to put us back in the game. And Terrence Edwards ran a great reverse. And we had two wins in the Outback Bowl. One of them was very decisive, and this one was very down to the wire.
That's crazy. It's funny, too, in that game because you were talking about the game started but not being ready. Well, that was the same for the Purdue kicker at Travis Dortch because he had a rough day that day.
Yeah, fortunately, he missed a few field goals. Yeah. He missed the one in overtime that they had the ball first, and they missed it, and then we go down. But good win for us, really kind of a tough year that could have been so good. I mean, we had so many what-if games that year, just incredible. But the worst one was Auburn here. It looked like we hadn't even practiced the first half. Certainly, and then of course the tech. But
That Outback. This is what Logan and I were talking about earlier. I don't think a lot of people realize because Drew Brees was the Purdue quarterback. He threw 60 times, but his offensive coordinator was a guy named Jim Chaney.
Yep.
And that's where I'll see him again this weekend.
When Jim was here, we talked about that game a few times. And of course, as fate would have it, when he coached in the pros, Randy McMichael was a tight end for him when he played for St. Louis at the time, and Randy busted him up on that a few times. But they did a good job of attacking us, and we did a very poor job trying to stop them. But fortunately, that just goes to show you got to make, when you make a guy execute, sometimes they can't do it, and they couldn't do much in the second half. And Josh Millard, we put him on the nose, and he did a really good job of rushing and harassing Breeze and some big plays too. It helped us.
Now there was a guy that could get under your skin, wasn't it, Josh Millard? And you like in a good way, I mean.
Yeah, I mean that guy was 100 miles an hour at practice every day, and some of the players like to kick it back a little bit once in a while and just chill. But I mean he was, and he had a good pro career. I mean he just maximized his talent. Very explosive, not real tall, but very powerful, and he could just. He get on your nerves if you're one of the guys going against him. And I used to tell him, I said, hey, just chill a little bit. This isn't full speed now. You know, we can't. And another guy that wouldn't go half speed was Kendrell Bell. I mean, the guy was a human wrecking ball. And I never will forget down at the Senior Bowl when he was down there with several of our players. I went down there to kind of back him up, you know, and just show him my support. And I was standing there with Bill Parcells, and they were having this 7-on-7 drill where they were, you know, just fitting into their blocks and doing stuff and everything. I said, this is not going to be good. And he said, what do you mean? I said, there's no way Kendrell Bell's going to go half speed here. I said, he's going to knock somebody's lights out. And he said, well, he's a good-looking player. And the first play, they ran 42 blasts, which is an ISO where the guy runs up inside. And fullback tries to lead on the backer. He knocked that fullback back into the back and then knocked that guy back into Mobile Bay. I mean, it was – and all these guys are looking at him. But you remember the first play he played in college was a kickoff, and he went down and he jumped over the wedge. He actually leaped over, kind of like Swift did that guy last week against Notre Dame. He jumped right over the wedge and made the tackle. I mean – And Rodney Gardner called me up. I was on the road. We were just first having cell phones back then. And I was out visiting a kid during an open date. And Rodney had gone down to this JUCO where he played here in Georgia, you know, middle Georgia down there. And we had linebackers. I mean, look at all these linebackers we had. And I said, we can't take a linebacker. He said, Coach, we got to take this guy. I don't care if we don't have any. He said, we got to take this guy. He said, he's a human wrecking ball. And we took Kendrell, and he was unbelievable. I mean, just what a great player.
He was a heck of a player. Just weird how – I mean, I know he had, I guess, with some academics, but the guys that could fly – he didn't fly under the radar, but
– Yeah, I mean, he's a good high school player, but he kind of really got a little bit taller and stronger. But
yeah.
Just so explosive and had a great pro career. I mean, he played really good for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I remember Coach Cowher called me when they had their first mini camp. He said, this guy's unbelievable. He said, I got to get him to cut it back a little bit. These guys don't like him going full speed all the time. I said, I can't tell you much. He's not going to do it, Coach.
You want him to not go full speed, just have him stand on the sideline, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, what I'm saying is every practice is you got certain things that you kind of, you know, the tempo is not game-like, you know. But for him, it was every play was like that. And but another linebacker that we had that nobody ever remembers, but we only had him for 1 year and he transferred, was Kuika Mitchell from down in the Orlando area. And Kuika played he transferred to USF because he had a girlfriend down there, and it was not good for us. And I couldn't get her to come up here or anything. So, but he played 9 years, made the Pro Bowl. But we had it at that one picture that I saw in my house here a couple weeks ago. Had in one class had Kawika, Boss Bailey, Grant, Charles Grant, and Tony Gilbert, and the kid from down in Pensacola, you know, the one that intercepted the pass against when we won against LSU, played 15 years in the pros.
Oh, good grief. Keep talking. I'll remember it. Yeah.
I went to his mother's funeral here. I was riding by there on the way out here about 6 years ago. Just a great player. He'll be mad at me that I can't remember who he was, but I remember three, four of them. But there was five guys there. Just unbelievable how good those. And then we brought Bell in on top of them.
Jeez. Telling you, some serious talent, that's for sure. All right, Coach, hang on for a moment. We got to take a break. We will. We got to talk about that Clemson game for sure, and some of the other things that happened this past weekend.
You got to have a better 2-point play than that. I thought it was good that they went for two.
Yeah, though. Yeah. No, I don't think that was a problem. But yeah, the play itself. All right, it's 8:32.
And welcome back in. It's the Morning Show 960 The Ref, presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. Logan and Dave along with you. And since it's Tuesday, that means our best two-hour block of the week is currently happening right now. Coach Donnan in studio, the temporary studio. Got a brand new mic in front of him. Thanks for joining us, Coach, as always.
Glad to be here and glad that I've got my old manager out there listening to the show, Brandon McKeach.
There you go.
Who washed a lot of these guys' uniforms for me. But Will Witherspoon's, how can you ever forget him? But he was the other guy. But my memory's not near anything like it used to be. But I sure do appreciate Brandon listening to the show. And hopefully I won't forget as many of these guys. But that was a pretty good group of linebackers right there.
Will Witherspoon. My buddy Mitch, who's listening to us up in Boston, he said, oh, it's Will Witherspoon.
Got that big mid up to stop. What was it, a 2-point conversion LSU was going for, and got his big mid up there and knocked it down. Great.
Was that Josh Booty? Right. Was the LSU quarterback?
Right.
Yeah.
Jerry DiNardo.
Yeah. He was trying to become we came up with a stat. There are four different coaches who won at Sanford Stadium with two different teams. And those four coaches are.
He won at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, so he was denied here. And Saban did not do it. So the four coaches were Tommy Tuberville.
Auburn and Ole Miss.
Yep. Let's see here. Also had Danny Ford with Clemson and Steve Arkansas. Steve Spurrier won here, Florida and South Carolina. And do you know who the fourth is? It's a big name in college football.
Well, we know it's not Nick Saban.
It's not Saban.
Did not win with LSU. Is he... It's not Les Miles.
Got a big name in college football.
Still coaching today?
Nope.
No.
He dead.
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
The Bear.
Bear Bryant.
Kentucky.
Kentucky and
Kentucky and Alabama. Yeah.
Now, those are the four that Jeff and I came and Brayman and I came up with.
Butch Jones had an opportunity, but Central Michigan just couldn't get over the hump.
His Dan LeFever-led Central Michigan team could not win here.
No, Sean just hurtled right over that.
Yeah. You know, old Coach Coley was telling me the story about Antonio Brown, and he said that he was down there at Florida International, and he was trying to help out Antonio Brown, and he told Jimbo Fisher, you know, you got to take him up Florida State. This guy's a phenom, but, you know, he had some issues with his grades and everything. Finally, he got Butch Jones to tag him up at Central Michigan.
Butch was in on him at West Virginia, right. And then when he took the Central Michigan job, got him to go there.
Coley helped him.
Yeah. And the rest, they say, is history, Coach.
Yeah, he's going to the XFL, I guess. But usually when you got that many bad things going, it's not any. It's just not worth it to players get like that. But
well, Coach, let's talk a little bit about the Clemson North Carolina game. There's kind of this, like, you know, if you're voting for Clemson being number one or Bama being number one, being a former coach yourself, you know how it is. I mean, games like that can happen. Would you have dropped Clemson out of the number one spot?
The thing that's so saying in today's society is, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Even though they've won 19 straight games, which is incredible in today's marketplace to be able to do that, they just haven't looked very pretty in their games. I mean, you know, you talk about Lawrence is supposed to be the heir apparent to the Heisman Trophy. He's just having a very average year. You know, all those big plays they made last year, they're not making. Everybody's jumping on them and doing a pretty good job stopping the running game. And their defense lost some great players. I mean, how many guys get drafted like that in the first round? I mean,
incredible,
especially in the front. So, but their schedule is so, I don't know if the word inadequate. I mean, just inadequate as far as really, you know, the week before, North Carolina got pummeled by Appalachian State. And Appalachian State's really rolling offensively. Got a new coach that came in there from NC State. Lost their coach to Louisville, but he left them some good players. It kind of reminds me when I left Marshall. We left them Chad Pennington and Randy Moss.
That's pretty good.
They didn't lose a game for 2 years after we left. And good coaching, but good players too. So I think in the Clemson situation, you got to base it on who's playing the best at this time. And right now, even though Ohio State's schedule hasn't been overwhelming, their defense is just lights out to go with their offense. And, you know, they've been more impressive because LSU, Alabama have not played that great on defense. I think Auburn's really had the two biggest wins for one team, you know, although A&M doesn't look quite as big now as it did because they barely beat
Arkansas
last week. But the thing that's just so phenomenal to me is if you look at the top 10 quarterbacks, and you could rate a lot of other guys in there too, just the proficiency, you know, Hurts had his first interception this last week. Tua hasn't thrown one. Jake Fromm hasn't thrown one. All these guys are just operating at a level. Joe Burrow's had a couple, but they're just throwing. I mean, Hurts is about 400 yards and six touchdowns ahead of both Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray at this time. You know, total offense, he's run for so much more yardage too. But the way these quarterbacks are operating on an efficiency level, the quarterback for Washington State, even though they've lost two games, threw nine touchdown passes in one game. I remember
they lost
my senior year. I mean, I had a great year for our team, and I think I threw 11 touchdown passes the whole year, and that's counting warm-ups. I mean,
those warm-up TDs should pile.
I used to get back there and try to throw it 50 yards just to let the crowd woo during warm-ups. But no, I never did that. I just rested my arm the whole warm-ups because it was getting old. Yeah, my dad used to say to me, he said, when the team runs out on the field, why are you always the last guy to run out? He said, you're a senior and everything. He said, why don't you run out? I said, I'm going to tell you why I don't run out. We got this wild man in there named Mark Capuano who gets in there before the game as a defensive end. He starts hitting everybody on the shoulder pads and hitting them with his helmet and everything. And I go in there in the bathroom and stand on top of the commode so they can't see my shoes and make sure he doesn't hit me, and then I come out last. I was scared to death I was going to get jacked during
Mark
pregame.
Mark Capuano.
Blocked two punts against Georgia in the Liberty Bowl.
Is that right? How about that? Is he still around?
Yeah, he coaches up in Pennsylvania, up there in Western Pennsylvania. But
that's funny.
We talked about on the show before Chuck Amato and Mark Capuano, and they got in a big brouhaha during spring break out there, and so the campus police came over and talked to Coach Edwards and everything. So he was notorious for putting things up on the bulletin board, mm-hmm. and he said, notice to everyone, nobody's supposed to get in any fights during spring break or after spring break, particularly those guys whose name that end in O.
Capilano and Amato. That's funny. Well, Coach, let me ask you this about the Clemson-North Carolina game. You can prepare for a team, you know, 100 times over. Is preparing for the other team's two-point conversion attempt? Because you don't is that to kind of know what a team might want to do as far as tendencies?
That's one thing that's really impressive about our Thursday practice. Kirby goes over the what-ifs, and they go over situational-type deals about the last 45 minutes of practice, and he's got specialists that are analysts that look at all the different plays around the country, special plays and two-point plays and all, and you know they'll show that on a reel to our players, but they don't actually practice all of them, but they go over what the history is of teams' two-point plays. So usually speaking, you practice it all week, two-point defense and two-point offense, but you don't really know what the other team's going to be in on defense, and you don't know what the other team's going to run. And I think in this situation, the quarterback was way too deep when he started on the option path. You need to be on the line of scrimmage, so if you do pitch the ball, you got a chance. But when you pitch it back and the guy catches it 6 yards deep, it's a tough deal. But I applaud Coach Brown because his team defensively was worn down. They weren't as talented as any of it. And if you could have told them at the pregame meal when they had that at the campus inn, I'm sure that's where they stay. That's where we used to stay, which was an old nostalgic place that had some of the best food I've ever eaten. So if you could have told them at 9:30 that morning that they could go for – they had one play to win the game against Clemson, that he'd take it.
Oh, so yeah.
It was a good call as far as deciding to go for it, but the play itself was not that well struck. And the thing I don't like is calling timeout, because it looked like you're trying to figure out what you're going to do. You've had all week to figure it out. Don't let the other team go over there and talk about the what-ifs. You know, seize the moment. You just scored. Plus, they just had a replay that had lasted a long time, too, that, you know, whether the guy caught the ball or not. So I think the biggest thing there is just run your best play with your best player, you know. I've had some real good success with two-point plays over the year, but I would say 90% of them have worked and maybe 10% didn't, but you just got to have one you really feel good about.
Yeah, I just didn't know if you don't see teams' two-point conversions as much as you see their regular offense and
right.
trying to defend them.
But, you know, situational stuff that you do in practice is one is go for two offense against go for two defense. Yeah. And now with the new rule in the overtime where the third overtime you have to go for two, you probably practice the two-point play
right.
a lot more because you know that – and defending it because you know that if you don't make it and the other team does, or, you know, then that's the situation. Or so I think
– yeah.
What we used to do is we practiced overtime all the time because those are situations that your kids need to know. Hey, if you get a penalty in overtime, it's deadly. If you got a chance to recover a fumble in overtime, don't try to scoop and score. Just recover it because
right.
that's history. All kind of different things. And you usually walk through those things on Friday just to remind them of it.
You know, it's funny. We talk about, like, there's some weekends where it doesn't look like there's going to be, you know, there's not the best games on paper. But, like, when North Carolina's lining up to go for that, too, that's as good a drama as we've had all year
exactly.
right there.
Exactly. You're going against the defending national
yeah.
champion, and you Max created an unbelievable atmosphere. And every game they've had has been down to the wire. You go back to the first game against South Carolina, the game against Miami when they won. Wake Forest, they had the ball with a chance there
yeah.
at the end. How about the Wake Forest Demon Deacons undefeated
yep.
right now? And they got a chance to go 8-0. The Demon Deeks from Winston-Salem.
That's right.
You know, people don't realize, a lot of older people like me, but I'm sure, do you know that Wake Forest didn't used to be at Winston-Salem?
Mm-hmm.
They used to be about 30 miles from Raleigh in a town called Wake Forest, yeah, North Carolina.
Actually, they used to actually be in Wake Forest.
And they, the Reynolds Foundation there, where they had all that money from the cigarettes up there in Winston-Salem, made this big offer to them to move the whole campus to up there, and they built a beautiful place. But they had this old guy named P. Head Walker, who was the coach at Wake Forest. And he was a old grizzly type guy that talked a lot how long we got here? I got to hit this.
Yeah, we got a minute or so.
He talked a lot like Frank Howard. And when he'd bring the kids in, they would, from the north, he would take them over to NC State and show them the stadium and act like that was a stadium. And then when they'd get up there, they saw that old crockety old place over there at Wake Forest. Hey, well, I just wanted to show you where we played. I didn't mean that we were playing our home games there.
That's a good point. We do play here. It's just not our home games.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny stuff. All right, hang on 1 second. We got to take a break. Coach Donnan will be along with us for another hour as we look ahead to the Dogs in Tennessee as well as the other big games around the country. Of course, if you've got any questions for Coach, you know the drill, 960theref@cmg.com. It is 8:51.
The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gotts. Weekdays, 10 to noon on Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Ref.
All right, 8:54. It's the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. David Logan along with you. Coach Donnan here in the studio with us as well. And it's time to take a quick trip around the SEC, brought to you by Dr. Pepper, the official drink of Fansville. It's also the official drink of Coach Donnan for University Tire and Automotive's Bulldog Friday night.
No,
we're
doubt,
over at the
doubt.
Blind Pig. Love that. We'll talk more about this in the 9 o'clock hour because we're almost up on another break here. But
I gave too many stories today.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
The best kind of radio.
We got to go about the SEC last week or what's
going on? Well, I was just going to ask you, Coach. Yeah, from last week,
you know,
how impressive was what Auburn did to Mississippi State?
Just pulled their pants down.
Yeah.
I mean, just completely butt-kicked those guys. I mean, what a tremendous performance by Bo Nix throwing the ball. Their defense continues to be dominant. They gave up some you know, easy scores. But overall, Auburn, to me, without question, is right up there with LSU challenging for the West. And until Alabama's defense shows me more than what they've seen, I think that game at for us going over to Jordan-Hare and Alabama the next week, I mean, Auburn's right there. I mean, they got the Gators this week, but the Gators' defense is pretty good, but their offensive line is just really New York life. People run – that Trask going to be running for his life. So that was an impressive win for them to win like that. You know, when everybody's saying their offense is struggling. But if Knicks can play like that to go with their defense, they're going to be a good team.
We'll talk more about Auburn, the SEC, in the second hour. Certainly we'll talk about the Dogs in Tennessee as well. All right, quick timeout. One more hour to go. It's 8:57.